This meeting is now being recorded.
Are we doing roll call or anything like that, Brenda?
I'd be happy to do a roll call. I just want to thank you. Thank you, Susan. This is the first meeting for the RDS, who is to subgroup 6, topic number 7, compliance. The call is taking place on December 1st, 2017 at 1500 UTC. And on the call today, we have Alan Greenberg, Carlton Samuels, Krista Spain, Erica Mann, Susan Kawaguchi, and from ICANN.org, we have Jean-Baptiste Durlet, and Amy Creamer, and myself, Brenda Brewer, and I'll turn it over to you, Susan. Thank you.
Thank you. And Carlton, thank you so much for joining. I thought this didn't work for your schedule, but we sort of needed to move forward. So thank you so much for taking the time. And you and Chris, Erica and Chris, too. So I just want to take a few minutes out of before we start talking about what the real topic is for this call, and just for Chris and Erica, the three of us volunteer to review the overall work plan for the review team. So we probably won't discuss that today, but if anybody has thoughts on that work plan and wanted to talk about it, we could take a few minutes for that. And I don't see any hands. So just a reminder then, we need to get that work in.
Also, Susan, just to take 2 seconds before you start with everything else, do you want to just briefly, how do you want to do that? Do you want to set up a call for the three of us? What do you want to do?
I really think we just individually, if we just did it on an email thread,
Okay, cool. I'm happy to do that. No problem.
Yeah, just point out whatever we think is an issue, and then and hopefully be able to just do that. But we do need to get that done probably by the end of next week.
Okay.
And let me see, I was going to email, we need the, sorry for not being quite as organized this morning as I should be, but, so what our real topic is today then is compliance, and as I stated a few minutes ago, this team is not looking at the recommendation from the first review team and reviewing that. We're actually looking at current status of compliance and need to come up with a work statement and work plan, which as soon as I get this emailed over to Brenda, she'll put up on the screen. And anybody have any thoughts about how we should go about that, what problems we're seeing with compliance in general? Eric and Chris, tell me your thoughts.
Sorry, Susan, I lost you for a little bit there. What was your question?
So I just thought maybe we should have a short discussion in general, and Carlton, too. I'm sorry, Carlton. I forgot you were on the phone. We're reviewing the current status of compliance concerning who is. So any of you have thoughts about, where we start and how we go about this?
Just Chris, did we get? I mean, my recollection is that. Just make sure I understand. Just so we level set properly, our goal is to report or review where compliance currently is with who is. So, as a starting point, would we? Is it right if I remember correctly that the last review team did a work on what the level of compliance was? And so presumably it would be useful to use that as our starting point and see if anything's happened since. Does that make sense?
Yes, but we shouldn't review the recommendations from the first review.
If I remember correctly, they actually did, I may be wrong about this, but I think they said, you know, and I'm making the numbers up, but I think they did a sort of survey and said, you know, 40% of it's inaccurate or 100% of it's inaccurate or whatever it was they said, right?
Yeah.
So if that's what we're talking about by compliance, i.e. making sure that the data is accurate, then if we use their numbers as a benchmark and see what they're like now, we've at least got some sort of path. But maybe I'm grasping the wrong end of the stick here.
Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, sorry. Compliance is not responsible for ensuring accuracy, though. Compliance is responsible for if they get complaints, and that now includes internally through ICANN's new tools to look at potential accuracy or at least validity of the formats to act on those. So,
okay.
And specifically, what we put in our scope was assess the effectiveness and transparency of ICANN enforcement related to who is, and identifying high priority procedural or data gaps.
Yeah.
So, I think the first step is to at least get from compliance, and I believe that we have an action item to get a report from them, but I think we need to specify what we want in that report. And I would think that we want to see statistics on how many complaints they have internally and externally generated and identifying them that way regarding who is information and what the outcomes are on those and, you know, how do they treat those. And for us to look at the public reports and say, are they being sufficiently transparent? Are they giving us information, or did we have? I guess we should do that first. And the question is, are they being open enough with what they are doing and what the outcomes are? Which I think is what transparency is. So I think the first thing to do is look at the reports. Can we get a picture of what's going on with regard to who is from the publicly available data, and then get a briefing to go into it in more depth.
So I agree with that to a certain extent, except I think we do need to go into it in more depth. You know, in my experience of submitting a lot of reports, you know, on who is inaccuracy to compliance, it appears, you know, and maybe this isn't accurate, but it appears from my personal experience that their responses and the actions they take are very inconsistent, so that they you can submit a very similar scenario. You know, the registrant is, you know, not listed in the who is, for example, or this address doesn't exist. And you'll get a different result. You know, you submit 10 and maybe 5 of them will be treated the same way and the other 5 are just, you know, sort of out there in la-la land for how they're resolved, if they're resolved at all.
Susan, how current is that information? I know certainly 2 years ago, that was an understatement. I have no personal experience in submitting requests, you know, in the last year, and certainly not less. So I don't know to what extent that may still be true. Do you have, is your information current, or is it history
I don't do that as much as I used to. I do, you know, after, once I left Facebook, but we routinely, on a monthly basis, probably, it depends, you know, we only submitted them when we saw an inaccurate who is, and but we probably submitted anywhere from 25 to 50 a month. And so that would have, that experience would have ended in April. But I've definitely been part of enforcement action since where those were submitted, not by me, but those, you know, and I'm still seeing those inconsistencies. Erica, would you like to? Your hand.
Yeah,
up.
I wanted to support Alan's report. Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Good.
I can.
I wanted to support his report. I think, Susan, your point, I agree with you, we need to do this, but I wonder, you know, there will be always a failure rate in WHOIS, even in the best system, there will be a failure rate. So one would have to understand, you know, what would be the threshold of an, of the most ideal scenario, and then one could judge maybe, you know, against the current rate of accuracy. So I agree with you, and I'm not totally sure, Alan maybe can say this better, how much this would be in the remit of our work. But coming back to the point, and I made a comment in the at the chat room, I would love to see as well from the compliance team at ICANN, not just their data, and I agree with Alan here, but I would love to see as well what they believe should be done in addition to what is done today to make the system even working better. Because typically you will get good insight from compliance people because they have a pretty good understanding of what is working well, and what is maybe not to the optimal standard. So I would want to hear this as well.
Okay, that's a good, that would be a good question for them, actually. And Alan, you have your hand up?
Yeah. Just so we're all working on the same ground, I think it's important that we talk about what kind of things we have seen in the past and that may still be going on to some extent, hopefully less. One domain that I put a complaint in on, and this this goes back 2 years or so, so put it in perspective. The email address, the part after the @ sign, was a domain that was not live. The mailing address was in France and had a postal code which was illegal in France. And there were several other problems, and the initial response from compliance is the registrar says everything's okay, so we're closing the ticket. That's probably a pretty extreme one, but it's an example of the kind of thing that was happening on a regular basis, and the question is to what extent is it still happening? I understand that they have gotten from the internal tool that they're now scanning with, they get lots of these. And hopefully they are not closing like that. But I think we need to see the statistics, and that's what I when I said we will investigate further if necessary. I think it's a foregone conclusion in my mind that there will be work that we're going to have to do afterwards. But I think we have to go through the process of getting statistics from them of what they claim is the situation, and then we can delve into specific cases a little better. And I think we probably want to go out to parts of the community that are submitting these requests on a regular basis today and seeing what kind of what they believe is the situation, and if possible getting examples from them of the kind of cases that they're seeing which are still being closed improperly, if indeed that's happening, but I'm guessing it is. Thank you.
Yes. And Carlton can't talk, so I'm going to read his comments in. At Erica, compliance is making some changes ongoing. We know that from the reports. So the CCTRT makes sense for this RT to get updated by them. And Erica responded. So if everyone could just please read Carlton's input there, too. One of my experiences, and it was pretty vocal at a ICANN meeting, but this has been pretty consistent. I mean, I've had more than three or four examples of this. Somebody registered in the name of Facebook. Facebook's the registrant. I submit a inaccuracy report saying, that this is inaccurate. The information is accurate. Facebook is an entity, but as the only person or managing the team that registers domain names for this entity, I can attest the team or I did not register this. So this is false information for this registrant. And so then it goes through the process. And the actual registrant comes back and says, no, to their registrar, I am Facebook. And then compliance says, it closes the ticket and says, we've gone through the process. They've said they are Facebook. Done. And it's like, let's do this over again. No, they are lying. I'm attesting to this. Let me know what else you need for proof, but this is not accurate data for that registrant, and I can attest to it. It's identity theft, and so it's like a circular thing. But it's because they go through a process. What appears to me is compliance goes through a process of this is inaccurate. Sends it off to the registrar as they're supposed to do. The registrar reaches out and says, "Is your information accurate?" And the registrant comes back, yes, it is accurate. And the registrar is like, we're done. It's accurate.
Okay. Let me ask a question. I'm presuming it's not only the name Facebook, but also your address or something like that. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever had the conversation with compliance of what do you need? Do you accept that I am working for Facebook, and I have the authority to speak on behalf of Facebook registrations? If not, how do I demonstrate that to you, or what else do you need? I mean, it comes down to either we need a process to make those kind of who is claims, or we need policy that has to be written. One or the other.
Right.
Because
and I would
any rational person will accept the fact, if you can demonstrate you are an officer of Facebook in this regard, and it is not Facebook registered in some other obscure country, where they have that trademark, but it's the correct one because they have your address. So either we need a process or policy, one of the two. I'm not going to debate it. And have you ever had that discussion with them, or what do they say?
And sometimes when I submit it, I have had that conversation, and they said, we followed the process, we sent it to the registrar, the registrant confirm. So if you get a registrar that is a good player and understands, who is policy, they'll just go ahead and suspend the registration on their own because they look at it and go, yeah, this is fake. Facebook is saying it's fake. We'll agree to that. We'll suspend that. When you have a registrar that is either a bad player, which we have those in our community, or just limited knowledge, then they go through the whole process of how they handle every single inaccuracy report, because you send it to ICANN. ICANN sends it to the registrar and says, you have 15 days to ensure that this data is accurate, because we've had this complaint, and within that 15 days, the registrar comes back and says, yeah, it's accurate.
Okay, but the point is, we know there are going to be bad players, and we know there are people who are not going to be paying particular attention. So the question comes back, what do we need to do, either in terms of process or policy, to stop that from happening?
I would say we need to review the process and how they handle inaccuracy reports to see if there is a consistent, and maybe it is consistent and it just doesn't appear that way to me, a consistent approach to and a logical approach to a domain registration, you know, inaccuracy report. That's what I would do. I would walk into compliance and say, tell me, you know, what are your scenarios? What are your processes for handling this? And is there ever a situation in which you, you know, instead of just passing it on, actually take an action, which I'm not even sure I can.
Well, that's why I said it's either process or policy.
Yeah. So that's one of the things I would like to look at. Let me just read Carlton's out. We see many reports of false flag actions as what you're exampling. False information, accurate data for the purpose of who is. That registration will pass every accuracy check now in place too. So, you know, I mean, Carlton's agreeing that, you know, I guess on the CCT, and I think we should, you know, read the, is the CCT review out yet? Because that may, there may be information in that report that would help us in our review. So, you know, Alan, you had asked for some examples. You know, I could give you examples all day long on issues with inaccuracy reports. But we do have our template, and we need to create a work statement and a work plan. We need to come up with an objective, and then provide detail. So does anybody have a draft objective, a scope objective in mind? And are there compliance actions surrounding who is that is that would be different than just inaccuracy reports? I mean, would we be looking at registrars who don't provide consistent port 43 access? I mean, is that something we would get into, make it very difficult for a registrant or user to find the WHOIS record in general? Do you think that's within our scope?
Not sure we included that kind of thing.
I mean, that in some ways that may be the recommendation, you know, compliance recommendation subgroup, because that was one thing that we were finding way back when is, A, it was hard to find the WHOIS record or the WHOIS search on a registrar site, and some just didn't provide any WHOIS. They just, and I'm not sure that's the current state of affairs at all.
Well certainly... I don't know to what extent compliance audits, you know, how easy is it to find the website. There are things in the RAA saying you must point to it.
Right.
And I think it even has words like clear, but I don't know to what extent they audit that at all. And
I would think that would be part of their audit, but maybe that's the question we ask them is, you know, is it part of the registrar audit?
Well, I certainly think one of the things we need to do early in the process is to you know, put together a list of all of these things that we want to ask compliance of, you know, are they currently doing it? What reports do they generate on? And that kind of thing. What would it have put in the scope? Essentially, I think the key word in my mind of what is in the scope is transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And data gaps in terms of what they are making available. And the real question is, can we tell from the public reports, can we answer any of these questions? And if can't, are there any reasons why we are not publishing the kind of information we're looking at? The whole reason being, it's important that compliance is perceived as doing their job. Whether they're doing it well or not, it's hard to tell if they're not publishing results which indicate anything. So I think we need to start off by putting together a list of questions. First of all, obviously looking at what they're publishing right now, and I admit I haven't looked at that in at least a year and a half or so. So I'm completely out of date. But I think that's part of our first task. Our first objective is to assess to what extent compliance is publishing information which makes their operation transparent in terms of ensuring confidence in the community that they are, in fact, doing their job well.
Okay. So I've been taking notes here. So
I notice Chris has his hand up.
Oh, thanks, Chris. Go ahead.
I just wanted to go back to listening to you guys talking this through. I just wanted to go back to what I was talking about earlier. I wonder whether it would be at least worth, it is an indicator, isn't it? And compliance is a completely different animal to what compliance was back when the last two-year report was done.
Yeah.
So having a look at whether or not accuracy has improved is actually relevant, isn't it, to what compliance have been doing, unless you believe that it's only improved because people have suddenly decided to be more accurate.
Well, part of it's improved is because ICANN is actively reviewing WHOIS records and effectively putting in complaints to compliance.
Exactly. I'm simply asking the question. I agree. I'm simply asking the question. I don't know what the answer is. I'm just asking the question as to whether it would therefore be worthwhile doing a comparison of accuracy or not. But I'll just leave it as a question. It just strikes me that it might be, and I underline might, be worth considering as something to do to at least help us in looking at whether or not compliance is actually doing a job. But I'll leave it at that.
So if we can drill down a little bit on that, and Carlton's been making good comments in the chat, you're doing a comparison of accuracy. So are you advocating to repeating the NORC studies or reports from just evaluating reports from compliance? What?
I'm not advocating, to be honest, I'm not advocating anything particular or specific. It may very well be that the answer is it's just not feasible to do it. But I just wanted to make sure that we had at least raised it and considered it, and then we can move on.
Okay. All right. Well, I've noted that question. And I also noted the transparency. Your comments. And just to read, so Carlton's saying compliance is publishing more data for sure. What is not clear is if more reports actually offer more quality and qualified information. And in my reading of the compliance reports, I would agree with that. Sometimes it's very hard to actually discern any real information from the compliance reports. So several things that we've, talked about too is asking the community, for input on their their view of compliance. And then obviously talking to compliance.
In terms of asking the community, we're going to have to make it really clear that we are looking for current information. Compliance has such an ugly history going back that it's so easy to cite the old cases, and we really need to make sure that they are current things that we are talking about, not things that go back several years.
Okay.
I don't know how we ensure that, but I think it's something we need to attempt to do. Because no matter how bad they may be now, they're better than they were before.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just think they have more state-of-the-art tools to work with. I mean, though I was pretty – go ahead.
Yeah, but you remember, they never took it as their responsibility to audit accuracy of who is. They viewed their job as responding to complaints. Other parts of ICANN have now taken it upon themselves to actually do audits. So the accuracy is bound to have gotten better, not necessarily because of what they've done, although clearly it requires them to diligently respond to each of the complaints. But the actual percentage accuracy presumably has gone up significantly because of the auditing, which is not, I don't think, is actually under the auspices of compliance.
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure.
ICANN in general doing auditing of inaccuracy?
Yes, they put a program in place to actually go through all who is records and look. Again, all they can do is check whether they're syntactically correct. But we know there were a huge number that weren't. So certainly Chris Gift reported on that several years ago. I mean, when we did the when I did the ATRT3, and that's now almost 5 years ago, they were starting that work, and one of the compliance recommendations essentially required them to do that. And although I think they initially answered, "Sorry, we can't," they eventually came up with some methodology.
Oh, okay. And it looks like we have Chris and Erica with hands up. Chris, is that a new hand or is that an old hand? Oh, old hand. Erica, please go ahead.
Concerning the issue about internal audit, it's in general a weak point at ICANN. So I'm not so sure how much compliance did. It would be certainly good to understand it. But the second question would be, of course, what is the standard this audit would be judged against? Is it a kind of average which is used in other internet companies, or what is it comparable to? Because it's good to do an audit, but if you don't have a benchmark, it's a little bit difficult to judge how good you actually are. So that's why I think it is important to talk to the compliance team and to staff to get a better understanding about this, and as well understanding the internal audit procedures.
Okay, that makes sense too. Just taking notes here. Okay, so it looks like we do have, we definitely have come up with some questions that we can fill in our work statement and work plan, but surrounding the inaccuracy complaints, the process surrounding those, transparency in data that in any of the work that that compliance does relating to who is, we'd want to look at the reports and get a briefing port 43 is probably an availability of who is at the registrar level is probably a question, though I don't know if that'll be our focus. The audits of and if there's a benchmark to review that those statistics from and what else? Oh, has accuracy improved? So I think what we need to do is what I'll do is take a crack at developing a scope, the scope objective for our work statement and work plan, put all these questions in just as a draft, and maybe take a crack at the complexity and ranking things, and then see, send this, you know, once I get that done, send this out to the small team and see, you know, we definitely, on the second page, it says, you know, request for ICANN briefing, request for ICANN materials, and interviews to be conducted. Does anybody feel like, well, if we really were to look at the accuracy of who is, do we feel like there's a need for the for an independent expert at this point? Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, my hand is up for something else, but no, I don't think so. We may well want a recommendation, you know, saying do another study or something like that. I don't think there's any need for us to do one. But what I would suggest, that's why I put my hand up, I think, although it would be purely anecdotal, I think we need to reach out to, you know, 4 or 5 organizations that routinely submit, you know, lots of complaints or a fair number of complaints to compliance and get a sense and, if possible, statistics of what their recent experience is, you know, recent being the last, you know, 4 months or whatever time frame is reasonable based on how long it takes to come, you know, for them to come back with answers. I think we really need to identify to what extent there is a problem today and what the characteristics of that problem are. You know, are they still rejecting what are clearly valid WHOIS complaints? Or, you know, has the syndrome changed in recent times? So, you know, to the extent I'm presuming you can identify a few companies that do this on a regular basis and will be candid with you, I think reaching out would be useful. We're not going to quote their statistics, but I think we need to be on rock solid ground that what we're looking at is a current problem.
Yeah, that's always, I think it's a good idea, but it's always difficult to get companies to divulge that, you know, and I'm not sure how many companies really take the time to do it because the results are sometimes not worth it, unless you've got, you know, if you have a specific enforcement target that you can't get anywhere else. But, so Mark Monitor might be a company that could put some, you know, high level statistics together if they're interested in providing that. And then, you know, there's a few attorneys that I could ask. So, I'll put that on my to-do list.
Yeah, I don't think we want something that they're going to have to stand behind, but I just want to make sure that whatever we put our efforts into, are problems that are perceived as real problems at the moment.
Okay. Yeah, I can definitely do that. I mean, I can think of a handful off the top of my head that might have a candid conversation and we could get, okay, that makes sense. And Carlton says we do not need any outside expert for this, Susan. You know more about the who is from the user side than probably all of us. thank you, Carl, that I'm not sure that's true, but some, like Alan, are embedded in the history of the problem and the surrounding issues. We can get useful information from people who have the problems. They're the ones who are self-interested in solutions.
I think that last sentence in Carlton's note is a key one. If we can make the world better for people who submit who is complaints to compliance, they have a vested interest in giving us a bit of information.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, and Carlton, compliments will get you everywhere, right?
Well, at least somewhere.
So any other thoughts on this?
Only that as we write the objectives, I think we not only want to focus on fixing compliance if indeed there are still problems, but in ensuring that they are making enough information available to convince people that they are doing a good job. I think that is absolutely, no matter how good a job they're doing right now, the perceptions mm-hmm. are still that they are the old compliance. And I think part of our job is making sure that problem gets addressed. I mean, to the extent there's still the old compliance, we need to fix that. But regardless, transparency yeah. and availability of information. And, you know, for instance, I'm sure they have statistics on how many WHOIS complaints are submitted, and I'm sure they give statistics on how many are resolved. But it becomes really important to know how many of them were resolved because the registrar changed something, or how many did they close because the registrar said there is no problem. Those are two
right.
very different beasts. And I don't know whether they're publishing that kind of information. My gut feeling without looking at it is they're probably not.
Yeah. I do feel like the policy change for the email validation, so once a year you have to validate your email address, has improved the accuracy of the WHOIS. What it did is a lot of domain name registrations were deleted. And, you know, you heard the registrars complaining about that. You know, there was, some claimed it was over 1 million, some claimed it was 10 million. Who knows. But, so, you know, we may want to ask them specifically, too, about that policy and how that has affected domain registrations and the accuracy. So, because that is a new policy since the last review team.
Yep.
I mean, I know that there's a lot of concern by the registrars on that. And to be honest, Mark Zuckerberg no longer had control of his Harvard email address that was on his registration, so I had to call in some favors to, and I didn't know. I mean, I didn't manage Mark Zuckerberg's domain registration. That was not my job, but it became my job, and had to work with the registrars to validate it was really him, and he mm-hmm. couldn't, you know, that he didn't have a right, couldn't access that email address anymore. So,
given the number of people who have email addresses with ISPs, there's got to be a huge number of people whose email addresses are no longer accessible.
It's not
exactly a rare phenomenon.
No, and they had a process. We just had to. It was, you know,
mm-hmm.
it was a few legal documents. So, okay, so what I will do is, like I said earlier, I will take the first whack at this work statement and work plan, and then send it all to all of you, we have a subgroup email list, and then hopefully we can get some comments back on that. within the next week, and do you want to schedule a weekly meeting? Should we talk again next Friday? Does that work for everyone?
In general, it does. I'm not sure. Any of us may have obligations. I think I'm actually busy next Friday at this time, but I think that's a reasonable plan. We can always cancel.
Okay. So we'll schedule a meeting for same time.
I have in my calendar that we have plenary session, which would be running just before 3 o'clock.
Oh, that's right.
1:30.
Oh, we forgot about that.
Not that matters. It just means it would have ended up going straight out of a plenary straight into this. So I have to think about whether you want to do that, but that's what appears in my diary.
Yeah, it should be in mine, but it isn't. I don't mind that.
Okay.
Well, if we're in the mood, we might as well just carry on, right?
Yeah, right.
As long as I'm not running both of them, I'm fine.
So Erica is traveling. Maybe we'll put out another doodle poll, too.
Yeah, I'll see how we do.
Yeah. And see.
What's success for this group, Susan? Is it just completing this work plan? And seeing it through, basically.
I'm presuming there will be some consistency in the people who participate in the actual work of the group as well as the drafting the work plan, but yes.
Okay. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. And I think, to me, this is a real core of the review team work in general. I mean, that was one reason I was interested. Compliance is something that is necessary to ensure who is, GDPR is going to blow it up, but but in the meantime.
Well, that's a positive view of the world you've got there.
GDPR is blowing everything up.
I mean, I'll give you it's accurate. It's accurate.
Well, I asked the question the other day of, does ICANN have a policy and how to publish email addresses on the website? You know, if I want ALAC, in my case, if I want ALAC members to be accessible to people, how do we tell people what their contact information is? The answer that came back is we don't have a policy. There's a number of methods. They have varying degrees of goodness, but GDPR is going to blow it all up anyway.
Exactly.
Well, I have the
answer. The answer is all emails should be addressed to Joran, and he can forward them to other people.
That's correct. That's fine. But we need his permission to put his address on everyone.
He has nothing else to do. Oh, he'll say yes. He has no choice.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm telling. That's what I'm about to tell ALAC members.
Yeah,
they can come up with a private Google address, which is or Gmail address, which is not used for anything else. But
absolutely,
people should how are you going to elect people to positions and say they are your contact, but we won't tell you how to get hold of them?
It's always all back to consent, right?
Let me tell you before we break what I think is a funny story. You might have heard the SSR review team has been paused by the board, and the chairs decided to, in their activities to try to restart it, to do a survey. So how do you get the email addresses of all the review team members? So I asked MSSI, and the answer was, well, we're going to have to ask them because we're not allowed to give out their email addresses. And we're going to have to ask them, and they're going to have to come back and say, yes, you can give them out to whoever is running the survey. And this went on for 4 or 5 days of how can we do this. Then someone discovered, if you look at the email archives, all of the email addresses are there.
Yeah.
Public.
Exactly.
Publicly accessible, except we do change the at sign to the word at. But they're all there in clear text. So much for privacy. Which, by the way...
There is no right, to be forgotten in ICANN land.
And, well, and until GDPR comes in and we're not going to be allowed to publish email archives anymore.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
Folks, I got to go.
Well, that'll be interesting.
Yeah,
yep,
me too. Thanks, everybody.
No, lots of email archives mask the address. They put, you know, part of the before the at sign and mask the rest or something like that. That's not uncommon on bulletin boards. So.
Well, thanks,
anyway.
Paul, for all the discussion today, and I'll send something out to you later today.
Thank you, Susan. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Paul. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.